Hi, I'm Kyle Bessie.
I'm Parin Begum.
Welcome to another episode of Journalism Today podcast from the Media Innovation Studio at the University of Central Lancashire.
Okay, so this time we are going to be looking at representation of sexuality and of an ethnic minority in our community. Our podcast will focus on the representation of two marginalised demographics in the history of our society, the LGBT community and the ethnic minority community. We want to explore whether these communities are being represented in the media in reflection to our diverse society, and if they are they being represented appropriately? We ask questions such as, who is dominating our journalist or media industry? What sort of impact does the use of labelling have? What implications does misrepresentation have on our society, and will there be progress?
So I'm the one mainly interested in the LGBT community, and I personally don't feel like I want to be represented in the media or in journalism. I just want to be accepted as a normal person, mm-hmm. and I don't think that I should be defined by my sexuality. And I think that the fact that we've had so many labels in the community, and the fact that there's actually a community in the first place, I think that plays a big part in how we are represented. And I think that the fact that we have to have the representation is wrong in a way. I don't think that be that way. Same for ethnic minorities.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. Journalists from ethnic minorities, do they have a responsibility to their community? Do they have a responsibility to represent them?
And should they be limited to only discussing those topics?
Exactly. Should they be limited?
Although saying that, I do think that being represented, in journalism and in media, I think that that does play a part in the fact that we are more accepted now. Mm. And I think I don't get as much, as many people like commenting on my sexuality anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I feel like in previous eras before I was born, if you were gay, if you were lesbian, if you were transgender, it was very much focused on. But now,
horrific.
I walk through the street and I don't get that many funny looks anymore. And I think that representation in the media probably does play a big part in that.
Yeah. So you can say, like, there's a lot have changed over the past 10
yes,
years.
Yes, definitely.
And that could be, like, what I think that's down to is the fact that there's been a more representation within the industry.
Mm.
There's been more employment from people from different sexual backgrounds,
yeah.
different age, different genders, different ethnic backgrounds, different religions.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot of impact on how the media outputs content and how the media outputs information, because people within the industry, behind the scenes, are sharing stories appropriately. And that has a lot to do with fair representation.
Yeah.
So a lot has changed, I think, over the past 10 years.
And I guess I'm really interested to see what our interviewees have to say and what their opinions are.
Yes.
And we also have a discussion with our colleagues, which I'm quite excited for.
But everyone still has a range of opinions.
Exactly. So
I'm
excited
definitely
to see a non-biased opinion.
Your
because
non-biased opinion.
I know that I'm always going to have the fact that I am gay as in my mind, so I'm always going to see it from that perspective. So I'm interested to see it from different perspectives. So I had a Skype call with a journalist called Adam Smith, who primarily works on the audience engagement team at The Economist, but he also writes about other LGBT issues for them. We had a really interesting discussion, actually, and surprisingly, the connection held very well. There was only a couple of hiccups, so that's quite rare for Skype. Adam said to me before the interview that this topic is important to him because he feels that there should be all sorts of diversity in the newsroom, as journalists have to understand different perspectives in society, and it's best to do that with diversity in the newsroom. So the first question I asked Adam was how he thinks LGBT-targeted publications have helped the representation of the community to move forward.
So they're very good for basically taking up stories that other media are unable to do or unwilling to do. I mean those sorts of stories that are, you know, from the margins, or just like underrepresented, or that they're too risky for certain publications to do for whatever reason. I'm not saying it's right that they're too risky, that those publications, I'm not saying it's right that, that regular publications make the decision that those things are too risky or that they're too marginal or too niche, but that's the way that things are. So specialist publications are always really good at finding those stories early on in the grand historical sweep and in covering them. Now they so I think that so that's the main reason. They're not without their drawbacks, really, specialist publications. And I think that there is a tendency, which is something that I'm not a huge fan of specialist publications being, so there's a tension between them being at the center of a community, if such a thing exists, and representing that community, and on the other hand, challenging that community. So there's this weird, difficult situation that they often find themselves in of both challenging and championing at the same time, and that's almost impossible. And so there's a lot of so there might be certain issues that are pertinent to a particular community, and there are challenges about how journalists go about representing those issues, and and whether they're doing that in a negative way or a positive way is something that I think audiences kind of often like find difficult to accept from a publication that is like supposed to be representing them. So that's a real challenge with any specialist publication, actually, whatever the subject matter.
How do you think that LGBT representation differs from LGBT awareness? Because I feel like it's mostly just like they're raising awareness around LGBT rather than just like representing it.
Well, yeah, and it also depends on what you mean by representing it, because if you're the producer of a current affairs television news program and you're covering a story about LGBT issues, are you only representing that story if you have an LGBT person presenting that story, or are you also representing that issue simply by the act of presenting it to people, right? I don't believe that the only people who are that should be allowed to tell certain stories are those who have lived those stories. I don't believe that's the kind of representation/awareness that is necessary in society. I think that, and I said only, I think that it is important to have gay people in the media, trans people in the media, queer people, bisexual, everyone, like making stories, producing stories, reporting stories, in front of the camera, behind the camera, all of those things. But I stop short of saying that only people with certain identities should present certain stories, because I think that that fundamentally misunderstands something very distinctive and unique about journalism, which is that it's the job of a journalist to understand what's going on in society and to present that back to society, and to do that in a way which is honest and truthful and genuine to that thing that's going on in society. Now, you might say that a gay person has more of a chance of doing that fairly and accurately around a gay story than a non-gay person. And that might be right. They might have more of a chance, but it doesn't mean that a straight person couldn't do it. And it doesn't mean that a gay person couldn't do it and fuck it up. So, or miss something, you know? So I think that I'm alarmed by a lot of the conversation around gay representation in the media, LGBT representation in the media, when it kind of falls into a race to the bottom of like, well, have you got, it's not even a race to the bottom, it's just a tick boxing exercise, you know, have you got this person represented? Have you got this person represented? Because if not, then you can't tell that story. That just really fundamentally misunderstands the challenge of what journalism is. That might be right if you're thinking about marketing demographics or something, or it might be right if you're thinking about maybe even politics or something, but there's something about journalism which means that it's the job of the journalist to understand what's going on in society, regardless of what their own identity is.
So finally, where would you like to like us to be in the next 5-10 years with the representation of LGBT? Like you're saying, would you like it to be not really a thing where we need to be represented?
Well, that's not what I said. I think that we do need to be represented. All of the L's, all of the G's, all of the B's, all of the G's, all of the Q's, all of the I's, all of the A's. All of them need to be visible, and they need to be making the media. But that is separate from the aim, which I think is a false aim and a misguided aim of having as some kind of like Eden-like rainbow universe where everyone is telling their stories from their own perspective and based on their own identity and to their own identity community, because like not every person who represents, who calls themselves an L, represents all of the L's, you know? So yes. So I just don't see the natural end point to that. That force that's at work in society where people think that everything has to be represented in order for everything to be like fully accurate and fair and everything. So where would I like to be in 5 years time? Well, I guess, yeah, like absolutely more sexual and gender minorities, both represented and representing, more of that, but also moreover, just a wider appreciation in the media for these stories and actually how they are not a niche subject. You know, you might think that a story about non-binary people is only relevant to like five people, but because it's about non-binary issues, but it's not. It's because it's about gender non-conformity, and gender is something that we all experience and we all perform, etc. So really, I think that the challenge to the media in the next 5 years is to understand how stories about sexual identity and sexual behavior and gender identity are absolutely fundamental to society and how we all relate to each other. So I think that's the challenge that I would throw down to the media.
Thank you, Adam, for offering such an insightful view on what it would mean for minority identities to be represented and also representing oppositely in the media industry. I guess that takes me nicely to a case study with Shaf Chowdhury and Sadia Habib, founders of a project called The Risk Test. And we shall hear more about that coming forward. But these two phenomenal beings, originally from tech and education backgrounds, have recently launched this new initiative, which will be perceived as an analysis tool that measures how the Muslim community particularly are portrayed in various media platforms, especially in films and TV shows. And their work has been largely and positively received by social media, other publications, as well as other professionals within the media industry. Now, Shaf and Sadia recognise that over the past years there has been a growing tension of misrepresentation and poor portrayal of the Muslim community in media platforms. So they have combined their disciplines and their effort to confront this peculiar issue head on. I was intrigued by the risk test, and I was curious to understand whether Shaf and Sadia thought representations of ethnic and religious minorities could improve if there were more people belonging to these particular backgrounds navigating the steering wheel behind the scenes, which is something we are trying to address and uncover for the journalism industry. It's also worth considering whether the journalism industry could benefit from a similar analytic approach as a risk test to improve better representation and portrayal of minority communities when reporting and publishing stories. So let's see what they have to say.
We've been talking for a long time about how representation in the arts, when it comes to people of colour, but especially Muslims, is pretty negative. You know, we're often invisible, or if we are visible, if our stories are told, they're not told by us, they're told by others about us. So We were talking about how we could measure this negative representation. What could we do about this? So about a year ago, we discussed what criteria we think would be important to consider if we're watching a film, for example, or a television show. What kinds of criteria should we look at in terms of how Muslim characters are represented? And we came up with quite a lot, like an extensive list of issues that concerned us about how Islam, but also Muslim culture and identity is portrayed. Mm-hmm. In the end, we decided to whittle it down to five key aspects. So the five main criteria that we decided on that we thought were quite important were: does the film or TV show star at least one character who's identifiably Muslim by ethnicity, language or clothing? Mm-hmm. And if there is a Muslim character, is she or he talking about or the victim or perpetrator of terrorism, or are they presented as irrationally angry or as superstitious and culturally backwards or anti-modern, or as a threat to the Western way of life? And if it's a male character, is he misogynistic? And if it's a female character, is she presented as oppressed? And we decided that if the film or the TV show features a character around these kinds of themes, then essentially the film or TV show fails our test.
I know you touched up on a very good point as well, that you know, often you saw stories that were created about you but not created by you. And I wonder whether you think that we need more say Muslims or more people from religious and ethnic minorities behind the scenes working on films, working on medium platforms to portray appropriate representations of their community.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. There's definitely the other side of the coin, which is people from within the industry creating high quality output and influencing the agenda from an industry insider perspective. And what's interesting, there are actually two strands to this discussion. We know someone who is a film producer who currently works at Pinewood Studios, Rizwan Wadan. It's just a coincidence that his name is Rizwan as well, and he's worked on films such as Rogue One and, you know, huge Pinewood blockbusters, and he's actually producing high quality you know, content that he's pushing out there, and he sees it as he's trying to resort to tackle the problem from an insider's perspective. And Rizwan's a very, very talented cameraman and producer. But at the same time, both Sadia and I have had people, young actors, Muslim actors, not just Muslim actors, but South Asian actors or minority actors, black actors and such, who've got in touch with privately saying that we love what you're doing, because as an actor who is trying to make it in the industry, they can't be too vocal about this because they don't want to damage their own opportunities and be seen as a quote unquote troublemaker and that kind of thing. So what they've done is privately thank us for raising the agenda and pushing this agenda so that potentially they might get better roles in the future. But again, the unfortunate thing is that as a young actor making their way in the industry, you know, you want to take the opportunities that are given to you. And you don't want to be seen as rocking the boat, or you know, you don't want to kind of limit yourself by being blacklisted and that kind of thing. So it is a two-sided coin. People that can influence the agenda, but then also people who, the majority of people who've got in touch with us are making their way or very early on in their careers. So yeah, it's a very interesting dynamic.
Do you think there's a responsibility that's put on
people behind the scenes, the navigators behind the scenes who are making films or writing stories or directing TV shows, etc.
I think it's rather than about putting the responsibility on people of colour and Muslims, I think it's more about opportunities and accessibility. For me, my main concern is what institutes that are established that are predominantly white should be creating schemes and opportunities and internships and so on to encourage people of colour who are talented to apply and to mentor them and give them those spaces.
That's good you mentioned that, because over the past 10 years or so, there have been schemes that are introduced, like the Diversity Fund by the NCTJ. The Guardians also do a positive action scheme, etc. And my point is, there's been numerous efforts made to introduce more people from diverse backgrounds into the media platform. However, there's still not been a changing trend in employment behind the scene. And I wonder why do you think that there might not be that much interest from the ethnic or religious community to change the narrative?
I wonder, how many people of colour are involved in the kind of management of these projects?
A lot of these schemes are that diversifying the people involved in these programmes to kind of promote a diverse opinion. And I think the conversations have moved on from diversity to actual representation. And when Riz did his now famous speech at the House of Commons, and Riz in that speech talks about it's moving on from diversity to representation, and yes, we need in the proverbial writers' room, we do need people of colour and from all representing all aspects of society to be in that room. And if a TV show or a film has a Muslim character in it, then there needs to be some Muslim input as to ensure that representation is correct. And what that doesn't mean is that we only want to see wonderful heroes who are Muslim on screen. And I think we can all agree that there are a few, if any, Muslim heroes on screen. But at the same time, representation also means that it's a more nuanced character than a falafel stand owner or a terrorist or an oppressed woman or all these tropes that we've discussed. Sometimes it just means a flawed character. So representation means a lot of things, and it means having people in the writers' room, but also it means having a rich and diverse portrayal of Muslims across society, really. I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, that's what we've been arguing as well. That's one of the reasons we founded the Riz Test, is that we want the people who you mentioned, the people behind the scenes, the filmmakers, the producers, the directors, the writers and so on, to really consider how they portray Muslim communities and think about how they could humanise Muslims, because essentially at the moment they're just these orientalistic tropes that are just perpetuated again and again. You see them again and again in film and TV programmes.
And I think that is all for now. Thank you, Shafa Sadia, for sharing your work with us today. It's been very interesting for me to observe how the Riz Test confronts the challenges of misrepresentation of Muslims in the media, as well as demonstrating the influential impact of mass media today. And if you want to hear more about the Riz Test, then please follow them on Facebook and Twitter. Their username is @TheRizTest, which is spelled The, R-I-Z-T-E-S-T. Or go on their website, TheRizTest.com. And finally, we are here with the editorial team of Journalism Today at the Media Innovation Studio. We will discuss, is it important or even relevant for the industry to reflect the society it represents? What implications can this have on journalists from minority and LGBT backgrounds? And how does the relationship between the plurality in the industry and the portrayal of minorities in the media come together? And hopefully we could touch upon some case studies that will help to highlight some key points.
So we had a discussion about who decides who the authority is to talk about that topic and whether or not they should be a member of that community to talk about it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I can see why, you know, anybody in a newsroom might not want to take on any given topic that's to do with a minority because they don't have that experience and therefore they couldn't represent it accurately. That said, do I think somebody from a kind of a minority background couldn't talk about, you know, big global issues because they're, you know, not, you know, representative of kind of the norm that we have in society? I don't know. It's an interesting kind of tension.
I think we're seeing, aren't we, with models like the De Correspondent, where people want to be an authority based on their influence, based on their knowledge of the topic, based on their expertise that's bestowed on them from either years of reading or chatting about it. And is that the authority with which they speak and represent that community? The case that you raised about Channel 4 I thought was interesting.
That was quite interesting in a sense that Fatima Manji, she was just reporting the daily news as normal, but when she was reporting the incident in France, the terrorist incident in France, she felt that she was just representing a mainstream community reporting the news. However, some news outlet felt that should she have the authority to report that news just because she was Muslim, just because Fatima Manji was from the Muslim community, should she be limited on what information she reports as someone from the ethnic minority, or are we boxing off journalists in boxes where they can only report on certain topics?
Yeah, so it's an example I trot out quite a lot, but Google Maps until very recently didn't have any facility for people with limited mobility issues to get around the world. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's 1 in 6 people in across the globe has some kind of disability, and Google Maps is certainly used by probably that many people as well, but there was no way for you to work out if there were going to be steps on your journey, if there was going to be a hurdle that you couldn't get over, and my view on that is that the reason that it was the way that it was because nobody sitting around the table when they were coming up with that idea had that kind of problem. And if somebody had a disability at the beginning, whatever it was, they might have said, you know, oh, actually this app won't work for me in this way, how about we do it this way, and it'll be, you know, a million times more powerful. And I think that's a really good way to understand how diversity can make you see a problem differently and actually help you build better products.
So, but is it a question of proximity to the community? Is it the fact that if you want to be representing that community, you have to be in and of it?
Yeah, good question.
I don't think that is necessarily true. And also, I think there is a risk that you might sort of end up causing the very issue you're trying to present. If you have black reporters exclusively report on black matters and Muslim reporters report exclusively on Muslim matters and Hindu reporters and so on and so on, because you're sort of not letting them participate in the bigger picture. You're just sort of like, this is your role, this is what you're doing, you're not doing anything else. And I think that is a problem. You should be careful to not go there.
Do you think that people are being hired as a token for their authority, or do you think that they're being hired for their experience, or do you think that there's a lack of being hired for experience?
Yeah, I think it's actually really interesting, and I guess not something that we talked about, thought about enough until we chatted it earlier. I think that diversity programs as they currently exist are filling quotas, because most news organizations realize that, particularly as you go up the ladder, they're incredibly white, incredibly male, often from a very limited number of universities and therefore a very limited kind of field of experience. Mm. That appears to matter because you just want different types of faces around the mm-hmm. table. But actually what's interesting, I think really, is that you know, those reporters, no matter what their background, should be objective because that's what journalism is about. Mm. They can report on any issue. Mm. Fatima can certainly talk objectively about what is happening in Nice, because she's a journalist.
Yes.
But in those news meetings, if you have all sorts of different people from all sorts of different places, they might not be assigned the religion story of the day, but they can go, you know what, there's a massive religion story that we're missing, and I know that because I'm from that community. And I'm not saying I should report on it, but we should all know about that because that is the audiences that exist in the world and the communities that we should be representing.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, because are we recognising that there is being more effort being made to diversify the journalism industry? The NCTJ organisation have put a funding together for the diversity fund, and so we can see that there are efforts being made to diversify newsroom. They're trying to reach the ethnic minority and the diverse community. But it brings me back to Perry's point about are we seeing figures low from the ethnic minority because there might be a lack of interest? It could just generally be that, you know, there's no interest or motivation from the ethnic minority to get involved in journalism.
Yeah, I think it's a bit about what you so there's a good line on you can't be what you can't see. So if you see only white 50-year-old men reporting the news, then you might think, oh, that's not for me. That's not the kind of industry that's for me. And you know, you could mention that about the construction industry or physics field or whatever, for different types of representation. That said, you know, you've got channels for specific groups that you know, BBC Asian Network, Gay Times, which are presumably staffed by people from those backgrounds because they do want to be involved, but perhaps they don't see themselves in those traditional spaces.
How and what way should conversations be amplified then, in that sense? How should the issues and concerns from the minority communities be amplified in our newsroom?
Yeah, one of my main concerns is how we can better understand the mechanics of story movement around the web, not necessarily the employment of people. So I am very interested in how we can either see a serendipitous or strategic amplification of an issue from one community into a wider mainstream. And a good example would be at what point is a topic that's very relevant to a community, who and how do we decide that needs to be amplified? And obviously that was traditionally the role of a news editor, very much a gatekeeping role. Whereas now in the era of social media, we have hashtags that can form a function to move debate and discussion. We have reporters who can amplify discussions, but it still boils down to a better understanding, I think, of the movement of stories around the web.
I think if you have a sort of complex function to check Twitter for trending hashtags, to check various social media, check Facebook, Instagram, and so on, and then you can use the traction a story gains across all those media, across all those websites, to see if it is something that is perhaps going to crash into the mainstream, and then that's how you decide if you're going to cover it or not, because there are usually telling signs, this is going to be big, this is going viral, this is in the process of going viral.
But what about the commercial imperatives that newsrooms all face that is has very much encouraged them to prioritise topics or spin them in a way that gets them more hits and therefore more money? That is very much against amplifying niche, well thought out pieces for a very specific community of interest.
And the technology kind of doesn't allow for that either, because not least when a story breaks, you'll see 50 headlines that are all almost exactly the same. So from a kind of distribution point of view, people are all watching the same things. But you know, algorithms in various places have been proven to be racist, create inequality, not to alleviate it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it matters who writes that code for that algorithm, for what gets prioritised. And, you know, if your sphere of influence is these specific topics, then and you write it that way, then that's what comes up to the top. It's not, you know, neutral. It's not the algorithms aren't necessarily designed for equality. Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to ask, actually, do you think that there needs to be more representation? Or do you think there just needs to be more diversity in the newsrooms, like you were saying? Like, do you think that there is a lack of representation, or do you think that it's
I personally don't think there is a lack of representation, because there is so much access to an overload of information. I think the key has got to be about encouraging people to avoid over personalising their news, because the minute that, out of personal choice, I've narrowed my topics of interest to three or four topics, then I have naturally excluded myself from a diverse range of topics.
I still do think that there is a lack of diversity in newsrooms, you know, particularly amongst decision makers. And I do think that matters because, you know, the makeup of the UK, for example, has changed an awful lot over the last, you know, 30 or so years. And there is a huge divide between who media organisations, particularly the press, are kind of appearing to write for and the kind of the demographics of people growing up in the UK. And I think that's a problem for their businesses. You know, and I actually do think that diversity in the newsroom done properly is doesn't mean that Muslims report on Muslim issues. It means that you've got a Muslim in the newsroom who's a great journalist who might bring you a story that you just would never otherwise have found if you were just, you know, 10 Oxbridge educated white men sitting in London scratching your heads working out what's new.
So how can we meet the issue of representation in the newsroom and appropriate representation in media outlet? Are we saying that they could be met if we have pluralism in the newsroom who can report appropriately on issues with the ethnic minority and mainstream news because they have experience, they can voice opinion, amplify and voice concerns from the community, but also representing mainstream ideas as well.
Yeah, diversity in the newsroom is key for me, not for diversity's sake, but for appreciating that, you know, if you look at the data, diverse companies make better decisions, they're more likely to enter new markets, they're more likely to be more sustainable. So I actually think that diverse companies, no matter what industry they're in, are better for economy.
Yeah, I'd agree. I don't think that there's a lack of representation in the media. I think it is what you're saying. Like it's the newsroom that's lacking the diversity.
I still think needs to be a lot more pushback against algorithms and. In some ways, personalisation, because I think that's not necessarily the way we should go.
One final thing to add on the thing that Kirsty just mentioned before is that it's one of the things that shows the difference when it's just tokenism and when it's actually sort of bringing in minorities in the process is that oftentimes there is a lack of minorities the higher up the ladder you go. So you might have a diverse newsroom, but then all the people in the decision-making are not minorities. So that is a case of tokenism, I believe. Whereas when you start having executives and editors and those roles filled by minorities, then even if the newsroom seems to be less diverse, it actually is truly diverse.
I think that's a very good point to finalise on.
So unfortunately, we have reached the end of this episode of the Journalism Today podcast. It's been really, really interesting. Lots of good things have been said. I've really enjoyed hearing what people have to say about this issue. Some highlights for me were from the Adam Smith interview. He said, "It's the job of a journalist to understand what's going on in society, regardless of what their own identity is." And I think this quote is so important because you shouldn't have to be from a certain group in order to talk about a group. I think all journalists should be educated on what's going on in the world, society-wise, in order to talk about it successfully. Because he also said that a gay person may have a better chance of writing a story about LGBT community, but that doesn't mean that a straight person can't do it. So where there are certain advantages to having someone from that group being able to sell that story, it's not to say that somebody who's not in that group can't talk about that story as well. So I think that those were some really interesting points. Please get in touch with us and let us know your opinions on this subject. I'll be really interested to see what everyone thinks.
Yes, thank you for listening to us. We hope you found this as insightful as we did. If you have any questions or comments or feedbacks about this episode, then please get in touch with us and drop us an email at journalismtodaypodcast@gmail.com. That's journalismtodaypodcast, all one word, and hopefully we will get back to you. Bye.
The music for this podcast was provided by Poddington Bear.